Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Woo, woo! Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
Draft day as well. The first round is in the books. The second round and beyond is coming up this weekend as well. And Key, I like how you kicked off the draft last night with a little wings and onion rings. That looked incredibly good.
It was good. Man, I just dropped them in that hot piping grease and, did my deal. Turned it in. Extra hot, though, too. Ugh.
The cold thing
about it is it came straight from the hot grease, right to the counter, right to in front of the TV. So I didn't have – it wasn't like I had to go to Wingstop, I had to drive. No. These came right off the stove.
Gentlemen, I have breaking news. On March 30th, 2016, Trey Young tweeted – happy birthday, Crimson Rose, !! Thank you for always being there for me, smiley face. I hope you have a great day, birthday cake. And Crimson Rose responded at Trey Young, out of all the pictures we have, eyeball roll. Thank you, Trey. Wouldn't want it any other way. That was March 30th, 2016. So the Crimson Rose, who was sitting next to CeeDee Lamb checking up on the phone, is also the ex-girlfriend of one Trey Young.
Well, now, what makes you say that's his ex-girlfriend,
though? Oklahoma. They could just have a sociology together. You don't know.
Yeah, what makes you – she might work in the athletic department.
I'm sure she does.
And then you sitting up there talking about that's his ex-girlfriend.
Travis, that might be the funniest thing you have ever said out of your mouth.
Thank you.
You're talking about that's his ex-girlfriend just because he wrote her a note.
That's not proof, LZ.
Come on, LZ, you're a better journalist than that.
And then there's, let's see. Well, maybe it's not the ex-girlfriend. I will say the way that she's got her hands wrapped around his hips and the way that she's snuggled up next to his cheek and the way he's looking in the camera in this particular photo I'm looking at, that's a real strange relationship to have with just a regular classmate.
She works in the athletic department, man.
Hey, man, yes. Norman, Oklahoma. Who knows? Who knows how it all goes down there. CeeDee Lamb goes to the Cowboys. We talked about that pick. We talked about his phone and Crimson Rose. The Chargers, I think, got the guy probably that they had their eyes on the entire way. Justin Herbert goes from Oregon to the Chargers with the 6th overall pick. Here's Mel Kiper talking about Justin Herbert going to the Chargers.
You look at Justin Herbert, he's really kind of an enigma. He's got all this talent, but at Oregon, kind of left you scratching your head at times with some bad decisions, not always throwing with anticipation. But when you look at him physically and athletically, he has it all. Size, arm, athleticism, tremendously intelligent. Great kid, class act, and he did improve this year. Think of Justin Herbert, once he's in an NFL offense, with that pro coaching and a pro system, maybe all those traits will really come together and make him an outstanding quarterback.
All right, so he's got some work to do, but Key, you've been very high on Justin Herbert as well. We'll see whether or not they get Cam or Tyrod Taylor. He starts on the bench. My question is this. Herbert is from Oregon, 6th overall. Jackson from SC goes to the Dolphins in the middle of the first round. And then we have the wide receiver from Arizona State who goes towards the back end of the first round. We had 3 Pac-12 players. Brandon Ayuk from ASU goes to the 49ers. 3 Pac-12 players in the first 32 picks. By comparison, the SEC, 15 guys in the first round. The Big Ten had 5 guys. The Big 12 had 5 guys. Where the hell have the Pac-12 players gone?
Well, can I take some of those guys and split them up? Joe Burrow started in the Big Ten, so the SEC only get a half of Joe Burrow.
Okay, so they have 14.5, and the Big Ten has 5.5.
So you continue to keep doing that, right? But I don't know, man. I'm surprised Jalen Johnson, the corner from Utah, didn't go when some of those other guys came off the board. Michael Pittman Jr. was always on the cusp of a late 1, early 2. Jackson from USC, the big tackle, he was a late 1, early too, went in the first round. When you start to look at it, Trey Adams, big tackle out of Washington, had a history of injuries. So he wasn't going to be in the first round, but if he stays healthy, he'll be a valuable pick in the second day, third day for somebody. You look at Arizona, they didn't have a lot of NFL players on their roster. Colorado, they really didn't have a lot of NFL players on their roster. Chenault Levinsky is a guy who, when you look at him, he's another guy, late first round, second round talent at the receiver position at Colorado. He's one of those hybrid guys who can come out of the backfield as well as play receiver. Then you look at UCLA. UCLA really didn't have any players. They got Darnay Holmes, who's maybe a third, fourth round pick at best. You go to Washington State, they don't really have anything. You know, you just start to look around the conference, there's not a whole lot. Oregon's best talent, two guys that selected to go back to school, D'Amador Lenore along with Thomas Graham, will be seniors this upcoming season. The left tackle they have will be a senior. Their running back will be a junior coming out. Their safety. So next year's draft class, I think, as a whole, Amon-Ra St. Brown from USC, Tyler Vaughn from USC, you start to look at next year's crop of guys. Now you may see a richness for the Pac-12 next draft opposed to this year where there was only three guys taken.
Key, I hear what you're saying, and you're right, and it's a good explanation as to why they only had three guys go in the first round, but this is not how it used to go. There used to be waves of Pac-12 and Pac-10 players go in that first round, and the SEC would have guys, the Big Ten would have guys, but the Pac-12 would be able to go toe-to-toe with as many high-level NFL players as anybody, and right now they're getting swamped. They're getting swamped by the Big 12, the Big Ten. The SEC, I guess, is in its own league. I mean, they had 15 guys. The next closest is five. But they're all the way down at three. This isn't just a couple of guys staying cool. The talent pool is much, much thinner.
But the Pac-12 historically has always drafted well, which means that players get drafted from the Pac-12 and they play a long time in the NFL. Where guys go high from the SEC and then they disappear after 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, that's always been, for a while, outside of USC, that's always been the case. And I think that that's what you're seeing now.
All right, so Justin Herbert, one of the three Pac-12 guys that got picked in the first round, he's coming here to L.A. He's going to come here and replace a guy that was the face of that franchise for the better part of two decades. He was asked the question, do you feel the pressure of having to be the face of a franchise in Los Angeles?
I wouldn't say it's pressure. I would say it's an incredible opportunity, and it's a chance to do something special. And to be given this opportunity, I'm going to do everything I can to make the most of it. And I want to be the guy that they want me to be, and I want to be the guy that I want to be. And I want to be the quarterback and the friend, teammate that I need to be. And there's so much that I can improve on, and I'm going to get better. I'm going to do everything I can to be the best quarterback I can be.
That sounds like what you want to hear, but that doesn't mean that he's ready for it. I mean, it means he knows the script, but coming into this city and having to compete with the likes of LeBron James and Clayton Kershaw and these guys, I mean, it is a totally different deal.
No, it is, and he's a quarterback, so he's going to sound like a quarterback. He's going to say all the right things. He's young. He's got to get used to being in L.A., trying to be the face of the franchise. Now, we don't know what they're going to do at the quarterback spot. Maybe there's Tyrod Taylor starts. Maybe Tyrod Taylor doesn't start. Maybe they go out and they finally strike a deal with Cam Newton and Tyrod Taylor becomes a two and Herbert becomes a three in an emergency quarterback situation until such due time that he's ready. We don't know yet because the draft's not over with and neither is free agency.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do with him. And, you know, when I spoke to Coach Lynn, I think it was last month now, or 2 months ago. God, time has flown. He seemed pretty confident in what they could do with Tyrod Taylor. And, you know, there were conversations being had, no, not extensive conversations, but conversations being had about maybe even benching Phillip Rivers because he was playing so poorly at one point during the season and going ahead and just rolling with Tyrod Taylor. So if they end up going with TT, the question is, do you believe that Justin Herbert can learn from TT? And then the other side of it, too, is do you believe Justin Herbert could learn from Cam? You know, because whatever Cam is going to bring to the field, Justin Herbert, from all intents and purposes, is not going to be able to replicate anyway. So exactly how are they grooming him?
Okay, let's play this out for a second. Let's, for the sake of this conversation, let's assume that Cam Newton does not come to L.A., that Cam goes somewhere else, that the quarterbacks that the Chargers go into the season with are Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert. Tyrod Taylor is a perfectly serviceable NFL quarterback. We've seen him take the Bills to the playoffs. We've seen him play in this league, and he's fine. He's also not your long-term answer. So when do you decide to put Justin Herbert into that mix? I mean, the Chargers, like we've talked about for a long time, they're a pretty good team. They got some bad quarterback play last year, which they're attempting to address with Justin Herbert. But do you go into this and, hey, look, Tyrod Taylor might win us a couple of more games than Justin Herbert over the 16-game season, but this is not the answer to our ultimate question. We got to get him out there sooner than later. Do you do a situation like we saw a few years ago with Case Keenum and Jared Goff, where Jared Goff was there and key, like you said, he was to start the season, he was their third guy. He was their emergency quarterback. And then by the second half of the season, he was starting. Or do you just jump all in and say, look, he's our guy. Let's start the process. Let's start the clock. I know it's going to be a rough season, but put the rookie in there.
Well, you can do that. I mean, rookies have played before and have done decent enough to where, you know, your team is competitive. But I think the Chargers are a competitive enough roster where if Justin Herbert gets in there and he catches on and he, you know, decides to engineer something a la Mark Sanchez, that all of a sudden you look up and he's got your team fighting for the division in a deep run into the playoffs. I mean, it could happen. It just depends on what you think you have in that position.
Does he have enough snap, crackle, pop key?
I mean, I don't know him personally, but it seems like that the team rallies around him at Oregon. It seemed like when I saw him live in person at the Rose Bowl that he had a command of the huddle.
But, I mean, yeah. is he going to be able to walk into a space? Say there's a citywide fundraiser and, you know, there's some notable people in this crowd. Does he have the kind of personality and energy that's going to draw eyeballs?
No. I mean, he doesn't. And I don't mean that being disrespectfully. He's not that guy. He's a great athlete, and he may turn out to be a great quarterback. But right now, just by the – because, again, he went to Oregon. He's from Eugene. He's kind of a mild-mannered guy. To get that snap, crackle, pop, I think he's got to come in and win. He's got to come in and have the Chargers like, wait, hold on a second. The Chargers are 7-2? What the hell's going on in L.A. with that guy? Then all of a sudden you get a little bit of the swag just because of the winning. But just walking in off the street right now before there's been a game played, I don't think he moves the needle the way a guy like Tua would, for instance, because Tua is from Alabama. Tua's got a little bit of what we're talking about. Justin Herbert is going to have that based on his performance.
And he may not have it based upon performance. I mean, Jared Goff went to the Super Bowl, and I would argue that, you know, he may not even be in the top 10 in terms of interesting athletes in L.A.
Well, first of all, the Chargers, I mean, no matter who you put over there, it's the Chargers, so it's not really – it has not gotten the notoriety, and it's not embedded in people's heads that it's the L.A. Chargers. So it's hard for the Chargers to be aligned with Hollywood, the entertainment, fundraisers, those sort of things where you would see people that you would think, okay, this is a celebrity-type event. It's the Chargers. So they're not known for that. They're not. It's not the Raiders. It's not the Lakers. It's not the Dodgers. They're the Chargers that's coming from San Diego. So people going to look at them different anyway.
All right, so coming up a little bit later on, we're going to talk to the Raiders' first-round draft pick, Henry Ruggs III. He's going to join us at 8:30. Coming up next, we want to talk about what the Rams might do tonight. We're going to hear from Les Snead on what he thinks about the draft board heading into round two. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, so first round, fellas, is in the books. The Rams, of course, did not have a pick in the first round. They traded that to Jacksonville when they got Jalen Ramsey last season. But they are going to get to pick today here in the second round. And we spent a lot of time talking about running backs key, whether or not that's a direction we want to go. We've talked to Les Snead about it. We talked to Sean McVay about it. Where do you think they're most likely to head with their first – as we sit here right now, and obviously trades are obviously a part of this, but – 52nd pick, so they're going to have to wait 20-some-odd picks into the second round before they go. Where do you think they go first?
I think they're going to go best available for them on the board. They've got a lot of little holes that they need to fill, and I think whatever the best player, the highest-rated guy that falls to them on that board is, that's what they'll select. Whether it's a running back, a defensive lineman, an offensive lineman, another receiver, whatever that's there, they're going to take the best player available.
Give us some names. Who do you think is the best player available today?
That would fall in that spot or just in general?
Just in general.
Well, I think you got to start off with the running back is Swift from Georgia. Then J.D. Dobbins from Ohio State, Michael Pittman Jr. from USC, T. Higgins from Clemson, the safety Xavier McKenzie from Alabama.
What about Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin?
Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin. But Jonathan Taylor has a fumbling problem, and nor is he nearly the catcher out of the backfield that Swift is from Georgia. So you talk about the Rams and Sean McVay, if it's a running back that they're going to go after and they're going to target, they're certainly going after a guy that they could potentially use out of the backfield and catching the ball. Otherwise, a second-round pick for Leonard Fournette would be something that they could get if that was just what they were looking for, as a big running back, really essentially what Jonathan Taylor would be.
Let's take a listen to Les Snead. Les Snead was asked how he thinks his board heading into the second round looks.
Simple math formula. Obviously, the farther you go up, the more picks you have to give, right? So, you know, you end up, it's one of those, is someone valuable enough to maybe give up one of your third rounds? Or do you wait a little bit and maybe give up the fourth rounder? So it's really a probably some sort of algebra formula on, if you move up, you're sacrificing, I call it multiple players for maybe less players. But we all know that, every now and then there's a player that's definitely worth it. So we'll certainly monitor it and try to determine whether it's best to attack or sit back and wait and, take who's there.
All right, let's go with that one first. That's obviously him talking about whether or not they'll be looking to trade up in earlier in the second round, or maybe move back and pick up a couple of picks. Just philosophically, Key, do you like that idea of more picks are always better than high picks? Would you rather have three middle picks than one high pick?
Depending on what's in the draft, depending on how close everybody is to one another. In this particular instance, the receiver position is so deep. If I need a receiver and I'm sitting at 50, I don't need to move to 32 to get him, because he's going to – if he doesn't fall to me at 50, somebody is. If I'm grading everybody basically as the same, I can live with whoever I get at that point. I think that's what Les is talking about, where, to move up to from 50 to 43, I would now have to give you a third or a fourth-round pick. Well, if you take that guy at 40-something that I was going to get at 50, there's another one that's going to fall at 50 that I thought was just as good, if not better.
Do you need to be in love? I mean, in other words, that guy right there, I have to have that guy. That guy's going to make my team a hell of a lot better. I have to get – do you have to feel like that about a guy to make a move up?
Well, that guy probably isn't going to be there, because everybody else is probably going to feel the same way about that particular person. If that's why you got to move up, because somebody's going to take him. If you feel that strong about somebody, somebody's going to take him for you. Before you.
Well, that's why you got to move up, right? I mean, if it's a player that's coveted, then you're going to have to pay. You're going to have to pay a premium to go get
him. If it's a player that's coveted, you're going to have to pay. But the beauty of being a scout, a general manager, a personnel guy, is you need to recognize talent and be able to understand what the talent is. Like, for me, there's no difference between T. Higgins and Michael Pittman Jr. III. T. Higgins was rated higher by some because he went to Clemson and he was in a wide open attack and they won football games. But then when you break down the film and you look at them side by side, they're the same guy. I'm looking for a big receiver. I could take either one of them and we'll get everything done that we need to get done. I don't need to reach for T. Higgins when he's going to fall to me, and I don't need to reach for Michael Pittman Jr. if he falls to me.
It sounds like that's what they were talking about with a lot of those corners in the draft last night. That after Okuda and Henderson, that it was kind of, take your pick after that. That the next five guys are all more or less the same guy.
And that may be true in college, but then what will he look like in my system, in my scheme, in the pros, and can we get the most out of him?
All right, so let's listen to Les Snead. This is the one about him talking about the draft board heading into round number two.
Oh, definitely. So nothing really, really changed today, because normally where we're picking, and I think I mentioned it in the press conference the other day, being a little bit later in the second round, even if somebody from this round would have fallen into early twos, they were going to have to drop, probably 8 to 10 spots before you could make a move to go get them. So you know, I you know, you, the board still the players that we've targeted, the players that we research a lot are still there. But what does make it interesting, Gary, is it's what we're still 20 or so picks away. So a lot of good football players are going to come off before we pick.
You know, hearing him say that makes me feel really good, because the Rams, you know, there are things to be critical about. But one of the things that I do not think that they're really ripe for criticism for is the way that they've executed their draft. They've drafted really well in that second round and beyond. They've really nailed it. If they're saying, no, if the guys that we've had our eye on are still there, that's a good sign.
That is a good sign. And some of those other guys, they know that they're not going to get unless they move up, and they're going to have to pay to move up for those guys. So they do the right evaluation on the other guys to know, okay, we can live with sitting where we're sitting. Because guess what? We got them rated higher than everybody else, and we like their potential, and now they're falling to us, so let's just sit tight, keep our picks, so we don't have to surrender anything to build our roster.
You know, my gut feels like the most important need is to get some more depth on the offensive line. But, Key, where do you think, from a position and need standpoint, the Rams need to look first?
I would take a look at the offensive line, but also would take a look at the running backs, because there's a couple of running backs that's on the board with first round grades that you could potentially get in the second round. You know, I would look at that.
So you don't believe they're set with Brown and Henderson? You think they still need something?
I don't think that they're set with it. No, I don't. I don't believe that they believe they set in it. You know, there's only two guys. You got to have a third. And if a guy like DeAndre Swift is sitting there and you can get him, why not replace a Georgia guy with a Georgia guy? J.K. Dobbins is sitting right there. Why not take a look at that? Guy's very productive at Ohio State. You saw what Ezekiel Elliott was able to do. You know, you need a big receiver. I know you got Reynolds, but you got Michael Pittman Jr. sitting right there.
Well, look, LZ, the question that you asked, I think, is a good one in the sense, especially when you talk about the offensive line. We know that Andrew Whitworth is going to be your left tackle. And then beyond that, I think there are some questions, because we saw Rob Havenstein get hurt last year. He was not playing well. And then they bring in Bobby Evans, who was a better player than him in the second half of the season. You got to answer that question. Nope, Boom and Allen were their two guys that they drafted a few years ago that were supposed to step in and replace guys like Saffold and John Sullivan. They both got hurt, so we don't even know what that is right now. David Edwards was there at that right guard. That's an opportunity there for him. He played pretty well in the second half of the season, but none of these guys outside of Whitworth are locked in, and all those other guys are either expensive and a little bit older or young and inexperienced. That feels like an opportunity for me, because what do we know for sure? Jared Goff is really good when he's got some time. And if you got to make sure that he has some time, he's going to do some work. When he's got to move his feet, he's a different dude.
Or those guys that you drafted on the offensive line, are they going to play right now? Are they ready to play right now? That's the
all
question.
Yeah, they've got some picks. They've got some picks, and they've done a really good job in that second round and beyond. So they're going to be on the clock today. They are at 52 as we sit right now. Kirk Morrison, who is my partner on the pregame show, the halftime show, and the postgame show on all Rams games. He's going to join us next. Post two. Kirk Morrison joins us on the morning show, 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
All right, first round of the NFL draft last night. Afterwards, you heard the show right here on 710 with Kirk Morrison and Alan Sliwa. They will be doing it again tonight after the second round. Mason in Ireland at 4, followed by Kirk and Alan at 6 o'clock. A Raider draft pick. He covers college football for ESPN. He's my partner on the Rams pre-half and post. Kirk Morrison, what's going on, my friend?
How we doing this morning, fellas? Good to be on.
Yeah, smooth. Everything great, man. What'd you think the draft went last night for the Raiders, bro?
Hey, man, my kids are still asleep, bro, so I got to be cool.
How do you think the Raiders panned out last night with Pickett, with their picks in the draft? Two guys, one from Ohio State.
Yeah.
The first pick, obviously, is Henry Ruggs from the University of Alabama, wide receiver.
Yeah, I do. I want to bounce this question off you for a second, Cube. I think the first pick, though, the Henry Ruggs pick, I had him going to the New York Jets instead of the pick earlier because I thought Sam Darnold needs another weapon, a guy who can get down the field, especially in the AFC East early on. You want to have somebody that can stretch the field. But they went offensive lineman, which, hey, I understand. Protect Sam Darnold in year three. Give him some more protection. So with Ruggs being available, that's a no-brainer for the Raiders, right? 4-2, that's just a Raider pick. A guy who runs a 4-2 can get down the field. Gruden wants to throw the ball deep. And so I was like, yeah, that's a good pick for them. I kind of shook my head a little bit with the Arnett pick. You know, I just – he's going to be 24 years old when the season starts. I mean, in college, I mean, in the NFL, a guy comes in at 24, it's almost like he's 30. You know what I mean? It's like you kind of scratch your head a little bit because he was just not a guy that when you looked at him on tape, you're putting in that first round, especially where the Raiders took him at. And this is where I want to ask you, Key, is that is it a product of he's a good football player and you get him in the first round, or was he a guy who benefited from having the Chase Youngs and the Bosa brothers and this list of defensive linemen and then playing on the opposite side of Jeff Okudah that makes Arnett the pick for the Raiders? So that's why I'm looking at, is he Gary and Conley? Is he Eli Apple? Or is he Marshawn Lattimore? That's what I'm trying to figure out from players from Ohio State who have been busts or being feast or famine.
Well, I think when you look at it, you say certainly they needed a receiver. Jared Judy was there. That's not a John Gruden-style guy, a little smaller. CeeDee Lamb was there. They elected to pass on CeeDee Lamb to get a guy that had not natural athletic ability. I mean, when you look at Henry Ruggs, the slam dunks, the highlight videos, the things that he's able to do with the football in his hands, he's got speed to give away, and he'll still be fast. So that pick was expected, a natural pick for me.
Correct.
The defensive back in Arnett was also a pick that I felt that the Raiders would do. I just didn't know what defensive back. Once you got past Jeff Okudah and you got past C.J. Henderson, everybody else kind of is stacked up together. You got Jalen Johnson from Utah. You got Arnett. You got other people at that position that are in the draft. So when they selected him, I said, okay, I understand. I mean, the Ohio State football players have panned out pretty good throughout the years in the NFL. Is it a bit of a reach for him? Not if you feel like that is the guy that you like most and you're in a position to take him. Could you have maybe moved down from that 19th spot into the mid-20s and maybe picked up some stuff there and still got him? Of course you could have, but apparently they felt like that this was the perfect spot to get him at 19, so they took him.
Yeah, I agree with that, Key. Just the only thing is I'm still a big fan of, you know, the Jeff Gladney from TCU. I like Christian Fulton from LSU as well, and even Trayvon Diggs out of Alabama. There are some other guys I thought played very, very well. I just don't know if Arnett, just for me, like I said, and if, for Raider fans, hey, the last guy you picked from Ohio State was Gary and Conley, and that guy was three seasons ago, and he's not even on your team anymore. So I'm not trying to go to past drafts, but we've seen guys from Ohio State.
Well, that was more of a personality. I think that Conley was more of a personality issue than it was his ability to play. Yeah. He missed some time.
But also, you throw in, but then you have Eli Apple as well, who's on the second team, you know, third team already. You know what I mean? Another first-round pick out of Ohio State. So I'm just saying, buyer beware. You know what I mean? Just, hey.
Well, that's the way a lot of people feel about Alabama corners. That's why when you see Alabama corners, because of their past, it becomes a buyer beware. You mentioned Diggs. Well, some people would say he benefits from the style in which Alabama runs their defense. So you're going to always have the naysayers. I gave the Raiders an A because of the position of need, despite who they selected. We all have our own, you know, favorites to a degree about what the talent is of certain players. But they needed a receiver. They needed a corner. They addressed both of those issues.
How do you feel about the notion that the pick that they used for Arnett was essentially the pick they got out of Chicago for the Khalil Mack trade? Does that come out making him look smarter? Is still wait and see? Like, how do you feel? Because you always got to remember how he got those picks in the first place. Losing a guy like Khalil Mack right out of the gate, was it still a smart move?
Well, I think, LZ, if you really look back right now, remember how the Raiders got crucified for trading Khalil Mack, but now we fast forward about 2.5 seasons later, and the Chicago Bears and the Raiders now have the same amount of playoff wins in that same span, right? Zero. So who's kind of winning that draft right now? I mean, because Khalil Mack is on a team that, you know, obviously they still don't know what they're going to do at a quarterback with Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles. So I look at the Raiders as them still acquiring picks and still have the future of, you know, possibly getting some all-pro type players or guys who can be cornerstones in your defense or your offense. So I look at the pick and say, okay, this is going to be value. They got more value out of trading Khalil Mack and then also not having to overspend for Khalil Mack because he just didn't fit with what they were doing. And people are like, well, how could you do that? But I feel like the Raiders are in a better position now, LZ, because of these picks. So I may not like the pick, but Arnett may fit what they want to do, and you got to give them props. But I go back to what Key said. I honestly believe that they were in no man's land at 19, and you really could have traded back and got a little bit more if you saw some teams get a little thirsty and try to go up and grab a couple extra picks for today and the rest of the draft.
Kirk Morrison joining us here on the Sprint People's Hotline. And Kirk, let's fast forward to you and I. We're doing a training camp show. We're talking about the Rams. The Rams draft who? When they come around to 52 today, where do you think they go with their first pick in the draft?
Hopefully. I mean, they don't have any draft capital to trade up, man. They should be able to try to trade up, Travis. They should. Because if they do, I would definitely would love to see them pick up one of these running backs. Only one running back taken last night was Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of LSU. Man, it would be great to see them get maybe a DeAndre Swift or a Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin. One of these running backs, because I'm just not sold on Malcolm Brown or even Daryl Henderson being your two running backs. I think you have to bring in multiple guys and create a competition, right? Because last night I saw the 49ers get better. I saw the Arizona Cardinals get better, what they got with Isaiah Simmons. And then also you got to look at the Seattle Seahawks. They didn't even draft, but yet they are still getting better because they traded back out of their pick. So the Rams have their work to do, but their pick has to be a running back, a skill position player that can help them out, hand the ball off for Jared Goff and get this offense back to where it was a couple years ago. It won't be just one person. All right, Travis, I think it's going to definitely have to be running back by committee, but at least get a nice little thoroughbred to go in there to help with the loss of Todd Gurley.
I think Seattle took a linebacker, if I'm not mistaken.
Jordan Brooks, I believe, out of
Texas Tech.
Linebacker with their first round pick. So, look, they're getting better. I think the Rams, again, they've got an opportunity. They've hit gold before in the second round with guys, and I think that this is a situation where Les Snead feels comfortable being in the second and the third round picking guys because he's had success at doing it before. This is a need pick for them. Because there's a couple places that they can use this pick, whether it's at the cornerback position, whether it's on the offensive, defensive lines, whether it's at the running back spot, whether it's getting one of these bigger red zone target type wide receivers, the T. Higginses of the world, the Michael Pittman Jr.'s of the world, the how do you say his name, Travis Slavonski from Colorado.
Yes.
Slavonski or something?
LaVisca Chenault. They got a lot of those guys, too. Yeah, they got a lot of those guys. My only thing is that you have some holes that have to be addressed, right? Corey Littleton goes in free agency. Who's going to be your middle linebacker? I already mentioned the running back position. They drafted well at the corner spot, right? Jalen Ramsey obviously is going to lock up one side. Remember, they paid Troy Hill a little bit earlier last year. He's probably going to be the other starter. Now, you have to find who's going to be the next. But they drafted David Long, remember, out of Michigan. He's probably going to be a guy that they're going to count on as well. But I have never been sold on the running back position. Even when Todd Gurley was there, I was saying, who was his backup? Because I look at the 49ers, and they were just running dudes out there. Remember last year it was Tevin Coleman. You throw in the Matt Breida, Raheem Mostert, 3-4 guys that can do it. Right now, the Rams don't even have one guy that I truly believe in, and I think that has to be the main focus tonight when they start drafting.
What's C.J. Anderson doing? Is he still around?
He's on the street.
Man. If CJ Anderson quarantined, I don't even want to know how much he weighing right now.
Kirk Morrison will be on with Alan Sliwa after the draft tonight. That starts at 6 o'clock. Mason in Ireland, of course, at 4. Thanks, Kirk. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Sounds good, fellas. All right. Appreciate it.
You got it. All right, Take It or Shake It is coming up next. All right, Key, an NFL draft heavy Take It or Shake It. Let's start with the Rams right here. The Rams will take a running back with their first pick. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Take it.
Take it. We got a replacement.
I think the Rams will certainly look at the running back position depending on which one is there. I think if there's a Jonathan Taylor that's sitting there, they pass on Jonathan Taylor. But if there's a Swift from Georgia, DeAndre Swift, if there is a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield, J.K. Dobbins from Ohio State, if you look at those type of backs, that's something that fits what Sean McVay wants to do.
All right, let's take a listen to Mel Kiper right here. Mel Kiper was talking about Tua, who went fifth overall to the Dolphins. He says that Tua needs to medically redshirt. Let's listen.
Yeah, Kurt, I really believe he needs the medically redshirt, let that body heal. But he's got to be more aware in the pocket and obviously stay away from trouble. He's got tremendous feel for throwing the football, throws through progression, so anticipatory a thrower. And the thing about him is he's not accurate. He's precise. He's a dart thrower. So I said what all said, left-handed Drew Brees. They had passed on Drew Brees because of an injury. Now Nick Saban's quarterback, Tua, injured. They don't pass on him. They take him. Now I think they got to sit him for a year, build that offensive lineup, and get ready for 2021.
Tua Tagovailoa should sit out the entire 2020 season. Take it or shake it. Take it.
Take
there you go.
Take it.
Of course he should sit out the season. There's no need to rush him to try to come. You got Fitzy. You still got Josh Rosen sitting there. So it'll be interesting to see. What if Tua – it's so funny. What if Tua's not better than Josh Rosen, though? What if all of a sudden Josh Rosen, the light just come on, bam! And he just
that's a great question, Key. Is Josh Rosen even going to get the chance to throw the light switch? Because Fitzpatrick's going to start, and then you got Tua. Will Rosen even get a look?
But will Tua be ready to even participate in training camp? I understand it's one thing to have a doctor check you out and say, yeah, he's good to go. But it's another thing when those live bullets go to flying and you get that body fatigue because you're doing football acclimated things now opposed to just working out inside of a building. Now, all of a sudden, you get a little bit of a setback. Josh Rosen gets inserted to the lineup, and he catches fire. But you can always trade Josh after he catches fire, though.
I mean, that's true,
too. Out. And he's a low-maintenance guy right now. It's not costing you much money.
Is Josh Rosen simply unlucky, or was he overvalued coming out of UCLA?
Man, he was good to me. I didn't see what the problem was. Obviously, a lot of people feel like he's not good. The guy, you know, he keeps bouncing to bad teams. Bad teams because all the good teams got QBs already.
Well, I think Josh Rosen is the ultimate example of you got to get a little lucky with your circumstance. And if you go to the wrong team with the wrong coach and you don't get the opportunity to play with other good players, God only knows, because he's been in two of those situations. And I just don't think anybody can say Josh Rosen is blank. Who the hell knows? We haven't seen him enough.
You don't know what he is. I mean, you really don't. I mean, I understand that coaches have seen him that have had him, but I mean, I'd like to see him get with a real quarterback guy. You know, he's been with a defensive-minded coach, two defensive-minded coaches, two of them. And now you bring in Shane Gailey, which is, you know, he's going to run trick plays every other play. So you still don't fit. Like, how do you get with somebody can you get with a Shanahan? Can you go back up in Seattle behind Russell Wilson?
Sean McVay.
Can you come to L.A. and be a backup to Sean McVay? I mean, like, you got to get with somebody that knows what the hell they're doing.
All right, let's go to the next one here. We saw everybody's living room last night. Mike Zimmer killed all of those animals on his wall. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Take it.
Poor animals.
Yeah, absolutely. Zim absolutely did that. Come on, man. That dude was a coach for how many years at Washington State? So he's up in that whole neck of the woods. He was interviewed for a Nebraska job years ago. So imagine what that is. And he's living in Minnesota. Come on now, stop.
It just seems like an awful lot of killing when you're supposed to be the first one in, last one out. Like, which one is it?
He's a sharpshooter on vacation. When he goes on vacation, he knocks stuff down real quick. Probably killing a couple animals a day.
That's terrible. He better look out, like you said earlier, LZ. Carole Baskin may be coming for him next.
Seriously, man. He don't get fed to a moose. He keep messing around.
Let's move on. We saw CeeDee Lamb get picked by the Cowboys last night, and not only were we talking about him as the pick, but we were talking about whether or not he had to snatch his phone back from his girlfriend, Crimson Rose. Crimson Rose will not be with CeeDee Lamb by the time that camp starts. Take it or shake it.
Shake it. And the reason I'm shaking it, because we don't know if that's that man's girlfriend.
Oh, I think we got a pretty good sense.
We do.
It might just be, again, somebody helping him out that works in the athletic department. And she happened to be there.
Are we going to have a grown-up conversation, Keyshawn, or not? Because you playing games. You know good and damn well what that was. Come on, man.
I know it was a friend of his sitting next to him on the couch who reached for his bat phone, and he snatched his bat phone away from her, gave her a stare down, and then defended himself on social media.
Key, did you – look, I've got a lot of friends. I don't have friends that touch me like that. that was not a, hey, you know, we had music 214 together. Let's sit and celebrate the draft. That was some really familiar touching.
What you say, your friend, you in quarantine, and you only got a few people that you can invite to the draft. You ain't inviting your friend.
You ain't inviting your study partner.
Exactly.
My friend don't snatch my phone like that, though.
Let's do a couple more right here. The Pac-12, after seeing the first round of the draft, is the worst Power 5 conference in college football. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
What? Who's worse?
No, I'm going to take that for sure.
Take it.
On a reverser. Yeah, of course. It's ridiculous. It's embarrassing. It makes no sense. Like, you had three people taken. One was a quarterback. One was an offensive lineman. And then another guy was a receiver. Yeah. So you expect for a guy to come from USC. You expect for a guy maybe to come from Oregon. And that's it?
Yeah.
Every single year you anticipate, no matter what USC is as a team, they're going to have a high pick. Every single year.
Every single year, they're going to have an offensive lineman, and every single year, they're going to have a skill player. You could almost put that in stone. And let's be honest. For a long time, UCLA almost always had a player taken in the first round. Always.
But UCLA is a good draft school. Guys get drafted out of UCLA good.
Not yesterday.
They just do. People don't realize that. UCLA, they wind up with a lot of guys playing on Sundays.
All right, let's go to one more here. Back to the draft again. The Packers should have let Aaron Rodgers know they were going to draft a quarterback. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
He don't have to know.
I don't think it really matters because Aaron Rodgers' job is not in jeopardy. So it really doesn't matter. That's more for, media, for people to have a conversation about. Because at the end of the day, you're drafting for a guy's future, not for a guy to replace Aaron Rodgers today, several years from now.
What if it's not about Aaron Rodgers, the football player? What if it's about Aaron Rodgers, the person? That they've decided that they're tired of dealing with his mercurial attitude at times, and that they'd rather just give this new coach a clean slate.
Well, to run Aaron Rodgers out of town for a coach that I'm not too sure on wouldn't be the right move in my position, from what I see.
So one of those players that did go in the first round from the Pac-12, of course, from Arizona State, the wide receiver, he goes number 25 overall, Brandon Ayuk from ASU. His head coach, former head coach in the NFL, Herm Edwards, is going to join us next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.